Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're highlighting remarks made by Dr. Brad Wilcox during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. Wilcox serves as Director of the National Marriage Project and Professor of Sociology at the University of Virginia. He's the author of several books, including Get Married, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. In this segment of Spotlight, Dr. Wilcox discusses the closing of the American heart. He makes the point that the state of our unions is impacting the pursuit of happiness.
I've been living and teaching in the shadow of Thomas Jefferson for about 20 years. And he's famous for many things, including founding my university, the University of Virginia, but also for being the primary author of the Declaration of Independence. And we know, I think, that famous phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that Jefferson authored. And it articulates, I think, for us kind of three core values that really undergird our civilization here in America. But I think we kind of can know and appreciate that today, this civilization is in trouble. And when it comes to kind of these three core virtues, what we're seeing in America today, when it comes, for instance, to life, among other things, is that scores of men and women across this country and across the state, primarily working class men and women, are turning to drink, to pills, or even to the barrel of a gun in record numbers, dying what are called deaths of despair, deaths related to suicide, to alcohol and drug overdoses. And they're doing so really by the hundreds of thousands. So kind of one indication of the way in which, and one kind of core value from the Constitution, from the Declaration, we're not doing well in America today. Or when it comes to liberty, the founders really understood liberty in terms of economic liberty. And on that score, kind of outside of the gentrified urban neighborhoods and gilded suburbs where highly educated and well-heeled Americans make their homes today, what we're seeing is that the American dream is out of reach for millions of American kids, especially poor and working class kids. So again, kind of the liberty front here, we're not where we should be when it comes to the American dream. And then that classic pursuit articulated by Jefferson, the pursuit of happiness. I would say kind of most tragically what we're seeing is that growing numbers of men and women across this great country are anxious, they're lonely, and they're unmoored, living lives often devoid of meaning and purpose. And so this explains why we're seeing kind of dramatic declines in happiness across this country. In this Gallup poll, for instance, that American happiness rates are hitting record lows. So the point here simply is that, you know, more and more Americans are not able to realize that classic American pursuit. And so it's in this way that the state of our unions is not strong. Okay, so that's kind of the first point that I want to make to you all this morning. Again, the state of our unions is not strong in kind of the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness departments, all kind of embedded in the Declaration. So what's the biggest factor kind of driving this story that I'm telling you this morning? Well, when you think about kind of what dominates the public conversation, you might think it's economic inequality, but it's not economic inequality. You might think it's about racism, but it's not about race. Or you might think it's about kind of failing schools across this country, but it's not about failing schools. So the biggest factor kind of driving the way in which our country is struggling to realize those three core values is about the state of our unions. And so when we look at a number of different trends across America, what we're seeing is what I call a kind of closing of the American heart, where there's less dating, there's less marriage, and there is less family formation. Take, for instance, this trend. The marriage rates come down by about 60% in this country since 1970. This is kind of one manifestation of the closing of the American heart. Even since 1990, the marriage rate in Illinois has fallen by more than 50%. And what does that mean kind of practically? I mean, it's kind of maybe an abstract statistic that might kind of seem, you know, significant, worrisome, troubling, but kind of what does that kind of practically mean for ordinary young adults here across the state? And what it means is that we're projecting across the country is that one in three young adults today will never marry, okay? And it's probably even higher for this state, given the fact that your marriage rate's actually lower here in Illinois than what we see in the country as a whole. So this is kind of a very kind of concrete manifestation of this closing of the American heart. And then another consequence of this closing of the American heart is that fertility, of course, is coming down across the U.S. And so the replacement rate in America for fertility is 2.1 babies per month on average. That's what kind of replaces the population over time. What we're seeing here is that the fertility rate has fallen to 1.6 babies per month on average. And that's, of course, well below replacement across the United States. So the national average is about 1.6, and you're below average here with 1.5 when it comes to fertility here in the land of Lincoln. And again, though, what does that mean practically for the young adults who are here in the audience today? What's the kind of takeaway for them? Well, what we're projecting now is about one in four young adults today will never have kids. So about 25% will never become moms and dads. And again, we've kind of never seen trends like this in terms of fertility and also in terms of marriage for our country. So many young adults, we're going to move through life without the benefit of becoming spouses and then parents as well. Now, of course, in the circles that I travel in, kind of on a weekday basis, in sociology, for instance, what I see is that there are plenty of people in my world, in the academy, in the universities, who think all of this is kind of no problem. I'm thinking of people like Eric Klinenberg, the author of a book called Going Solo. He's an NYU sociologist. And when he was talking about kind of his work on singles, he couldn't muster a negative word about the falling fortunes of marriage and family life in America. He said this, "For young professionals, it's a sign of success and a mark of distinction, a way to gain freedom and experience the anonymity that can make city life so exhilarating." He's again talking about being single. And for someone who's recently divorced, it's a way to reassert control over your life and maybe become less lonely, from his perspective again. So yes, all this is about success, it's about control, it's about freedom. These are the keys to meaning and happiness, from Eric Klinenberg. But as I spoke to ordinary young adults across the country, including in the DC suburbs and the Rockies, I got a rather kind of different perception, different sense of the way in which this dramatic kind of move towards going solo is playing out in the lives of young adults across the U.S. I'm thinking, for instance, here of a guy that I call Scott in my book. He's in his mid-30s. And by the standards of success in today's culture, nothing should be bothering Scott because he's got a college degree from Clemson. He has an engaging career as a military contractor, a house of his own, and a good-sized bank account as he makes more than $100,000 a year in his job. But these educational and professional accomplishments are not enough for Scott. He says, you know, I've got degrees in my wall, I've got accomplishments and certificates, but it doesn't mean anything in the end, is what he said to me. It's not like I can take any of that with me after I die. And he feels alone and at sea on many a day. Quote, I have to get up every day and look in the mirror and realize I'm alone. I have nobody. And Scott worries about the kind of fate that might await him if he should ever fall sick later in life. I have no help, you know. If something happened to me tomorrow, there'd be no one for me. Again, no one for me. So Scott's struggling with a kind of toxic mix of loneliness, meaninglessness, and sadness. Now, I think we all know there are plenty of single adults out there who are doing well, they're doing fine. And there are plenty of married adults, too, who are floundering. But on average, the story that kind of Scott tells us is more emblematic of the trends across the country. So my colleague, Dr. Wendy Wang, and I, for instance, have looked at happiness reports in America, and kind of separated out by marital status and family status, in part because there's so many voices out there who are kind of discounting today the importance of marriage and family life. And what we see looking at what's called the General Social Survey, which is the GSS, is that there's no group of men and women out there who are happier than married parents. And looking at kind of that 18 to 55 bracket. Now, of course, I'm sure that there are many parents and many spouses out there today, and you all know that it can be difficult to be married, it can be difficult to be a parent. I've been married 29 years, and we've had days, weeks, months, you know, where we're not particularly happy with one another. But overall and on average, married Americans, particularly those with kids, are more likely to be happy with their lives. For instance, is that married moms are the most happy women in this prime age group, 18 to 55. The least happy women kind of in this age group are both single moms and single and childless women. Again, I think our culture often tells us that marriage and motherhood are a pathway to misery and even immiseration. But we see in the data something very different, where women who are married with moms are the happiest, you know, kind of in our culture today. And there are similar trends like that for the men in America as well. And then this is also reflected, too, in research, trying to understand why is it that more and more Americans are failing at that fundamental pursuit. Again, that's the pursuit of happiness described in the Declaration. There's work done by an economist just kind of to the east of us, obviously. We have the Chicago economist, Sam Peltzman, who was looking at what are the factors that explain why more and more Americans are failing at that pursuit, the pursuit of happiness. And as he kind of looked at a range of different factors, what he found was that the number one factor that explains why fewer and fewer Americans are telling pollsters that they're happy is because fewer and fewer Americans are married. In his words, the recent decline in the married share of adults can explain statistically most of the recent decline in overall happiness. Again, so this kind of gives us statistical evidence that this declining reports of happiness in America is driven in part by what's happening in our families. And then when it comes to deaths of despair, what we see in work done by the Brookings economist Jonathan Rothwell is, again, he's looking at a number of different factors like education and race and trying to understand why we've been seeing such high rates of deaths of despair across America. And yet in his research, the number one factor that he sees is that in the counties where deaths of despair are much more common, fewer and fewer folks are married. And of course, the folks who are most likely to end up succumbing to a death of despair are working class men who are never married or divorced. Okay, so without kind of the meaning, direction, and purpose that marriage and family afford their lives, they're more likely to end up dying a premature death related to suicide, drugs, or alcohol. And then when it comes to the American dream, kind of that classic rags to riches story, going from kind of poverty as a child to affluence as an adult. What we're seeing from work done by Raj Chetty and his colleagues at Harvard is that the strongest kind of predictor of upward mobility for poor kids that is going again from rags to riches as an adult is the share of two-parent families in their communities. So the fact that many communities here in America today don't have a lot of two-parent families is, in his estimation, you know, one of the strongest predictors of why so many poor kids or working-class kids kind of remain stuck in a cycle of poverty as they move into adulthood. His work also kind of tells us that different regions across the U.S. are more conducive to fostering mobility for poor kids. So what would you guess is kind of probably the number one region, metropolitan region across the country for fostering mobility, upper mobility for poor kids based upon this research? Which metro area across America is most conducive to poor kids making it financially in the U.S. today? Salt Lake City. There is no metro area in America that has more two-parent families than the Salt Lake City metro area. And again, if you're a poor kid, you want to be kind of born and raised, in a sense, in the Salt Lake City metro area in terms of just having a real good shot at the American dream. And by contrast, kids who are raised in a metro area like Atlanta, Georgia, are much more likely to remain stuck in poverty as they move into adulthood, just because there are many more single-parent families in the Atlanta metro area than there are, obviously, in the Salt Lake City metro. So this kind of gives you a sense of how the topics we're discussing today are tied to the health of the family.
Dr. Brad Wilcox, during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. More of his remarks from that event after this.
Need somewhere to belong? Try here. We're socialites. Find us at socialites.blog. We aim to cultivate meaningful friendships and create places for people to come together face to face.
We do weekly group, Bible study groups, swing dancing. We even do bonfires on occasion.
We also connect churches via their YA groups in the Chicagoland area.
We want to be the answer to the question of, where do you even meet people anymore? Come find us at socialites.blog. Check out some of the events we got going or any of the groups that we host regularly.
Socialites.blog.
Join Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, 7 p.m. Friday, November 7th at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. To reserve seats for this very special evening, go to illinoisfamily.org.
I do get called every name in the book, but what's scarier to me is not standing firm in the truth.
Riley Gaines, a 12-time All-American collegiate swimmer, praised by President Trump for her fight for fairness in women's sports. Like IFI, Riley is advancing truth.
It's actually compassionate to tell the truth. That's what love is.
An evening you don't want to miss. Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute's Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, 7 p.m. Friday, November 7th at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. Act fast. To reserve seats, go to illinoisfamily.org, illinoisfamily.org. Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're highlighting remarks made by Dr. Brad Wilcox during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. Wilcox serves as director of the National Marriage Project and professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. During this segment, he explains the Midas mindset that is permeating American culture.
So the point that I'm making here this morning for my second point is the state of our union is not strong because the state of our unions is in trouble. So given this, how did we get here? What explains why the state of our unions in America today is so fragile? Why it's not as strong as it could be? And I think part of the story is a kind of a cultural story. And the cultural story is that we're kind of living in a world where our ruling class in the media and the academy and the pop culture is articulating what I call kind of a Midas mindset that encourages us to kind of steer a path away from marriage and family and towards mammon, towards work, towards money, and towards the unencumbered life, unencumbered by the bonds of, again, marriage and children. So life is about kind of the status-seeking self, and it's really more about mammon rather than things like marriage and family. And so we see this expressed in books like Eric Klinenberg's called Going Solo, which I touched on earlier. And he says, kind of in talking about sort of the value of living single, this. He says, living alone helps us pursue sacred modern values, individual freedom, personal control, and self-realization, whose significance endures from adolescence to our final days. It allows us to do what we want, when we want, and on our own terms. Okay, so again, there's kind of a whole set of values that he associates with going solo in life, and he deems them to be kind of a great value. Then we also see, too, in connection with this kind of Midas mindset, this idea that work is what's most important. Again, work is what's most important. And I see this all the time at UVA, where when I talk to students about kind of the things that are important to them, it's often kind of work that's the most important thing. So Holly, for instance, a recent graduate of UVA said this, UVA students are definitely more focused on their education, getting their career started, than getting into a serious relationship. If it happens, great. But the focus is definitely on building our own brands first. Basically, the thought process is relationships and love are risk, but you always have your career and success to fall back on. Again, her thought is you always have your career and your success to fall back on. Okay, so again, the Midas mindset, it's about self and career and status rather than kind of investing in love and marriage and family. And this Midas mindset is reflected over and over again in polls that we see coming from the Pew Research Group in Washington, D.C. What they're showing us is that Americans now are telling pollsters that things like money and education, especially having a good job, are much more reliable paths to living a fulfilling life than marriage and kids are. Again, so kind of a good example here of this Midas mindset in action in this Pew poll. So this is part of the challenge, I think, facing us. There's kind of like this Midas mindset that's now kind of driving the hearts and minds of 2 million young adults across the country. And it kind of minimizes their motivation to really engage on the family front when it comes to dating and marriage and family life, to be more intentional about trying to find a spouse, get started with having a family. There's also kind of a technological story here playing out as well. It's making dating and marriage and family life more difficult. So smartphones is kind of a big part of the story here, yes. And I talk about this in terms of kind of how we are addicted to electronic opiates. And smartphones would be kind of one example of that. But certainly I think for a lot of teenage boys and young men, you could think about kind of the role of gaming also. And so what we're seeing obviously with this technology is that it's degrading our capacity to socialize with people. And of course then to also date as well. So we see in work done by Gene Twenge, psychologist in California, that dating is down in America, and pretty markedly so in recent years. So it's obviously pretty hard to get married and have a family if you're not really kind of dating. This is just for teens, but the kind of the story is much the same for young adults more generally. We're also seeing too that as a consequence of this technological shift, that anxiety among particularly younger women and political polarization between the sexes is also more and more common today. So younger women in general are moving pretty hard to the left in recent years, really since the rise of social media and the smartphone. And young men are moving a little bit to the right as well. And that just makes it harder for them ideologically to kind of see things eye to eye, which of course is also another obstacle for getting together, dating, and then marrying successfully. And what's striking too about this particular technological problem is it's really a global problem. What we're seeing now in the data is that in countries from Turkey to Taiwan, from Argentina to England, just kind of like a massive decline in coupling and marriage is kind of being manifested, you know, throughout much of the world. And we do think that kind of the impact of smartphones and other devices is really kind of a major factor in driving this. Again, both because it, I think, kind of degrades our capacity to kind of engage in person with one another, but also because too, it tends to fuel, I think, ideological developments that can make people less interested in marriage and family life and more interested in kind of that Midas mindset as well. And then the next topic here is one that just already came up in my conversations outside in the lobby this morning. And that is the fact that when I speak to women on both the left and the right, both religious and secular, including my female students at the University of Virginia, they're often lamenting or complaining that the men or the boys in their lives don't seem to be kind of really agentic. They don't seem to have like a real kind of purpose, They're not as interested in commitment. And so in some ways, they think that there are not enough kind of marriageable men in, you know, in their circles. And this is articulated by a New York Times writer, for instance, not too long ago, and she was kind of critiquing my own book, which is called Get Married, from the perspective of how do you get married today if there aren't enough guys who are kind of interested and worthy of marriage. So in her own terms, Anna Sussman said this, she says, harping on people to marry from high up in the ivory tower fails to engage with the reality on the ground that heterosexual men from many walks of life confront the state of men today. And so in terms of kind of the more concrete indicators that we see today is that in our schools, boys are much more likely to be floundering. So for instance, about 2/3 of the worst performing high school students in our high schools across America are boys. About 2/3 of our best performing students are girls. And when it comes to our colleges, almost 60% of the kids in our colleges today are women. Only about 41% right now are male. And then we're also seeing, too, when it comes to patterns in the labor force, that a growing share of men are not working or not working full time. Today, 1 in 4 guys in their prime who don't have a college degree are not working full time. And that matters because today, even in 2025, we still see that women are much more likely to marry a guy with a full-time job. And they're also much more likely to stay married to a guy who's got a full-time job. And that's in part kind of driving this next figure, which is that women who don't have a college degree are a lot less likely to be married today than their female peers who do have a college degree. And that's in large part because the men in their social circles are way less likely to be employed full time. And that's kind of one of the big obstacles for them to getting married in the first place and then staying married in the second place. So again, kind of a third factor here that I think is driving our kind of state of the union today in America is just the fact that there aren't enough men who are marriageable. And then the fourth thing that I'll mention this morning is just kind of the secular turn that America has taken really in the last now 55 years, I would say. And I think everyone here kind of has some either intuitive or empirical sense of this secular turn that we've seen play out in American life in recent decades. It's the rise of the nuns, obviously not N-U-N-S, but the N-O-N-E-S's in American life today, where more and more Americans are saying they're not, you know, religious. They're atheists or they're agnostics or they're nothing in particular. Going from just 16% in 2007, to 28% in 2023. And it would have been, of course, even lower if we kind of were able to take this particular figure back into the 70s and 60s and, of course, the 50s as well. Okay. Now, why does this matter for marriage and family in America? Why is it consequential that fewer Americans are finding themselves in a congregation like this one on any given Sunday? Well, part of the story comes out in my book. I talked to an African-American couple in the D.C. suburbs, Martin and Kimberly, and their kind of experience is emblematic of some of the ways in which we see faith reinforcing stronger families across America. Martin mentioned to me, for instance, that when he's on the internet checking out his favorite news and music site, he's careful. But I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, the Bible is very clear about fleeing temptation, he said, adding, so yeah, certain sites I won't go on. So kind of protecting kind of the integrity of his marriage in that way. He also mentioned too that he kind of checks in regularly with his pastor about keeping his marriage and sort of fatherhood role strong. And then for his wife, Kimberly, she mentioned that she was sexually abused as a child, but through kind of the power of prayer, has been able to kind of work through that. And that's been very helpful for her and her marriage, she said. But that's how prayer entered, because it had some stuff happen prior to us that made having sex challenging for me. I'm like, okay, God, you're only going to heal me. Only God can really, truly heal this. So, yeah. So now this married couple with 4 kids is flourishing again in the DC suburbs, in part through kind of the power of prayer and the power of being integrated into a church community, kind of like this one that we're meeting in today. Americans who attend church together are about 15 percentage points more likely to be happily married. And then also, they're, depending upon the data set, between about 50% less likely to get divorced and 30% less likely to get divorced. And some of you may have heard, now it's probably two decades ago, that Barna had done a survey indicating that Christians were just as likely to get divorced as non-Christians. That survey was accurate, but they were just kind of measuring on the basis of self-ID as like a born-again Christian. If you look at church going, you see a very different story. So again, kind of going to church regularly as a couple and then praying as a couple are strongly associated in the research with higher quality and more stable marriages. And so the fact that we're kind of seeing less of this in America in the last really 55 years has obvious consequences for both people entering into marriage and forging strong and stable families. Okay, so I want to be clear. I think the message I'm giving to you all is sobering. We've seen basically how we're kind of failing to live up to our core values when it comes to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in America. We're seeing also that a big part of it, sort of the story in that failure, is that the state of our unions is not strong enough in America today. And then we're kind of also kind of looking at some of the ways in which changes in culture, changes in technology, changes in men's kind of place in the world, especially economically, and kind of the increasingly secular cast and character of American life helps to explain why the state of our unions is not where it should be, okay? But I want to kind of end on a hopeful note and kind of just underline a different way of thinking about what I've just said to you is that we know that the science is kind of underlining two things in my presentation. And one of those things is that forging a strong and stable family is for most of us kind of one of the best pathways towards realizing that classic American pursuit, the pursuit of happiness, okay? So we kind of need to be able to understand and appreciate that and share that, you know, that reality with our friends and our family and our local communities and even the state at large. So I'm just saying part of the good news that I'm also conveying to you kind of subtly in my presentation amidst the larger sobering news is that we're seeing from a scientific perspective, again, that folks who are getting married, having kids, and are living their lives in the context of religious community are much more likely to be flourishing in America today. So we need to kind of share this good news and do it in a couple of ways, by spotlighting the cultural value of marriage, by trying to figure out both in our personal lives, but also in public policy, how to rein in the kind of power of big tech so that our kids are not kind of having their hearts and minds captured by both social media and by gaming. We need to figure out ways to kind of bridge the gender gap by kind of lifting up the fortunes of our boys and men, both in our schools and then in our broader culture and our economy. And then kind of figuring out ways too to strengthen marriage and family ministry. I'm sure this church is an exception. What we see is that more than 70% of churches across America have no organized marriage and family ministry. So that's obviously, they're not kind of like doing the best they could be on this score to serve their congregations. And then the final thing we need to do, I think, to kind of turn a corner here is to encourage more young adults to date. And I'll give you just kind of one example of how I've done this in my own work as a professor. So I had an RA 2 years ago, and I was talking to him one, you know, afternoon, and I was kind of asking him about his plans, you know, professionally. He kind of gave me a very detailed plan of the next 10 years. I think he was about 21 at this point. He was going to work for about 3 years, then go to grad school for 2 years, and then work, you know, here. Kind of very clear pathway kind of mapped out for him. And then I asked him, well, Kyle, would you like to get married? And big nod, yeah, mm-hmm, I'd like to get married. Well, Kyle, what's, you know, are you dating anyone right now? No. I'm like, well, what's the plan for getting married? And it was kind of complete silence, right? He had no plan to kind of go from being single as a 21-year-old guy, great guy, smart, hardworking, church-going, to being married, okay? And so he just needed an encouragement, which I gave him to kind of go out there and ask him out on the date, which he did, and was happy to see Kyle and young men for our own church community kind of circulating on Sundays after church in the wake of this. But the point is that we kind of need to encourage our young adults to be much more kind of intentional and active when it comes to dating, kind of given many of the larger challenges that we're talking about this morning that confront them. These are the kinds of steps that we need to take to revive the fortunes of marriage and family, recognizing that, at least kind of from a civilizational perspective for our country, nothing could be more important than taking steps like this, because equipping men and women to embrace the vocation to marriage and family life and preparing the next generation to do likewise is the best path to reviving that most important American pursuit, which is the pursuit of happiness.
Dr. Brad Wilcox, during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Our thanks to Pastor Mark Moore and his leadership team for allowing us to be there. You can view Dr. Wilcox's Worldview Conference presentations on the IFI YouTube channel. Join conservative activist Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, Friday night, November 7th, at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. Reserve seats by clicking events at illinoisfamily.org or call 708-781-9328. We would love to see you there. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. And tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.